Have you ever done acid? Just once. It was too much like Saturday mornings when I was a kid. I'd wake up before anyone else and repeat the same word over and over until it was meaningless.
This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, May 3rd, 2010. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, talking about Dorothea Grossman. If you do an internet search on the poet Dorothea Grossman, relatively little turns up. Relatively little, given that she has been around for a long time, living and writing and performing in Los Angeles. One thing that does turn up online is a CD she did with trombonist Michael Vlatkovich called Call and Response.
The poetry of children is that they just got here, so they're still smooth as river rocks.
In March, Dorothea Grossman appeared for the first time in Poetry Magazine with a portfolio of very short, witty, and weirdly moving poems. The person who brought her to the attention of the editors at Poetry was Emily Warren. Emily's a poet and a former editor of our website, poetryfoundation.org, which makes her the former editor of this program. She's going to give us a quick tour of Dorothea Grossman's work by phone from Seattle. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Curtis.
So tell us when you first came across Dorothea Grossman's work, and tell us also what you liked about it.
Sure. A friend of mine kept telling me about a friend of hers who was coming to read her poetry in Seattle, and that she was from L.A. and that she performed with a jazz musician. And I was kind of lukewarm. I thought of all the poets I heard with jazz musicians.
Uh-huh.
We went to hear her in this kind of art gallery, and there was maybe three or four people there, and there she was sitting next to a trombonist, and she had these little black binders, and she would read a poem in a deadpan almost without any affect, and then he would play a jazz riff. And the poems themselves were like these little snippets of attention or little comic poems.
Definition of happiness, number 5013. They're playing Johnny Mercer on the radio. There is a bowl of yellow apples on the table. You just came in whistling, and tomorrow's a national holiday.
So I left the reading performance and thought I might like to see some of those on the page.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked my friend to ask her to send me, say, 35 or 50 poems, because she had so many in these black notebooks. They arrived the same week that a publisher had asked me to review and critique two manuscripts for publication. And those manuscripts were written by poets who had many publications, who had jobs in universities, and they were competent poems, and they just put me to sleep. So I was reading those poems, and then I would turn to her sheaf of poems, and they seemed like real poetry.
I have to tell you, there are times when the sun strikes me like a gong, and I remember everything, even your ears.
And I kept thinking, now, why are these good poems? They were, and these other manuscripts weren't. So I wrote Chris and said,
the editor of Poetry.
Yeah, and I said, you know, I think you might like to take a look at these poems. They're by a woman who's in her 70s. She's lived in L.A., and she's really basically never been published. And would you like to take a look at these? So that's how it started.
Well, let's hear one of the poems that she sent you from the sheaf of her black binder. This one's called Future Past.
Sure, and actually it's from one of her many black binders.
Okay.
That's what interested me so much, that she had these hundreds of poems in these black binders. So here's how this one goes.
Future Past. If I had stayed asleep, I would have missed the fun of speaking English, the quiet satisfaction of appointments kept, the way dreams change when you try to describe them.
What I like about this poem is that, as in many poems, she sets you up.
Mm-hmm.
If I had stayed asleep, I would have missed. You think of becoming more aware of life or a falling in love or an incredible place you visited.
Right.
And what does she say she's missed? The fun of speaking English.
Right.
She's saying, if I'd stayed asleep and not become aware of just the very basic, ordinary things like speaking English, which is also unconscious. You know, we speak English without thinking about it.
Yeah.
But then something odd happens, something you're not expecting, where she says,
the way dreams change when you try to describe them.
She has us focused on the ordinary and then shifts us to the pleasures of the strangeness of trying to describe dreams. That you can never describe a dream because in your description it changes, which is much the same thing that happens when you try to write a poem about life. In a way, what she's doing there is describing writing a poem about life.
All her poems seem to be incredibly compressed and are often extremely short. Let's hear another one.
Sure. One of my favorite ones has vegetables in it in an unusual way.
I put my hand up your sleeve, looking for God knows what. And your arm seems protected and holy. I feel unworthy the way I sometimes do around fresh vegetables.
Well, here she is putting her hand up her lover's sleeve, and it suddenly begins to feel protected and holy. So she's searching for something that feels protected and holy,
mm-hmm.
and what she comes up with is fresh vegetables.
Yeah.
And suddenly you've forgotten all about protected and holiness, or even the love she feels for this her lover. All you're thinking about is fresh vegetables. You know, so she often is making fun of being poetic. So, oh, it's protected and holy. So as soon as she, you can almost hear herself as soon as she tries to be overtly meaningful or profound or
mm-hmm.
poetic,
mm-hmm.
she immediately brings something up which will dissipate that or dissolve it.
And the effect is charm. It's charming and funny and weirdly moving.
Yeah, and we all can relate to it. We don't take ourselves too seriously. This other short poem that does exactly the same thing, you can see that the thing that she's trying to describe is stated very simply, I love you.
I love you as if it's World War II, and you've just been called up. It's raining hard, and I'm wearing a sensational goodbye hat.
Now, I just really love that poem because, you know, we've all seen these pictures of the GIs standing on the aircraft carrier and all the women and the wives waving at them wearing these elaborate 1940s hats. So you get caught up in your memory of the scene or the photographs you've seen.
Yeah.
And what is she doing there? She's just describing I love you, but you've forgotten what that is by the end of the poem. Or you haven't forgotten, but I love you has becomes this very playful, very funny love that you wish you could experience, this kind of playfulness.
Yeah, and I love how the speaker in the poem feels so good about herself because she's wearing just a great hat.
Yeah.
which is funny. It's a funny commentary on love. Love makes us as individuals feel good. You know, we feel great about ourselves when we're in love.
Yeah. And her love extends to all kinds of things. Like this poem, one of her wonderful poems about cats.
Yeah.
I chose this because it also really shows another aspect of her poetry, which is in these tiny little short poems, she's often telling a story.
While I savor autumn's first apples, my cat swallows summer's last housefly.
That's wonderful.
I know, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's hard to read that and not think of Basho or any of the other great Japanese haiku poets.
Right.
So one of the ways I think her work distinguishes itself is that it's ordinary. It isn't trying to be profound as what we've come to think haiku are. So in haiku, in Japanese haiku, you often juxtapose one image beside another, and in that juxtaposition, there's kind of an aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
But in her poems, she often juxtaposes things, but what often the juxtaposition does is point to ordinary life or, you know, any number of emotions or predicaments we find ourselves in, or the fun of life.
Mm-hmm.
Hers follow the same kind of principle, but they're really about don't take life too seriously so you can take it seriously.
Yeah, I think that's the watchword in most of her poems. There's a lightness and there's a humor behind, and I don't mean laugh out loud humor behind it, but there's a twist that seems to be rooted in humor in almost every one of her poems. And I actually asked her about that, and this is what she said.
Is humor essential? Well, I mean, it's part of what gets us through. It's certainly, I think it's an inescapable part of who I am. Maybe that's an accurate way to put it. So what I write, even if it's solemn, there's going to be a sort of an edge to it. Maybe I can put it that way.
You know, life is not, sometimes you have a sense that we just have to get through it. And so that the humor is a way of getting through what often isn't pleasant or is difficult to bear. So in this wonderful poem of hers called Noon Concert, there's a twist, but what that twist allows you to, well, let me just read it.
These frail white widows who get their hair done weekly in tight curls, like little flowers, bend their heads until the applause says, it's time to be brave again.
She's telling a little story. She uses a simile. Their tight curls are like flowers. So we're thinking, oh, this is a poet talking about flowers and this ordinary event of elderly women going to hear classical music again. Mm-hmm. And then until the applause says it's time to be brave again, she makes us feel their bravery and courage in just getting through life.
Emily, thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Emily Warren is a poet in Seattle. Her latest book of poems is Shadow Architect, published by Copper Canyon. You can read a handful of poems by Dorothea Grossman on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Her CD is called Call and Response. Her books include Museum of Rain and Poems from Cave 17. Do let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.